Silver Rise Society.
Welcome to the Silver Rise Society, listeners and viewers alike. We're finally covering a film that I've wanted to cover since it came out. But Justin doesn't like to be on the trends, you see? He likes to let things simmer. So we've been simmering on a film that you've probably seen, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I love this film. I think it's actually one of the few films of our era that is original, is truly original, and actually provides meaningful commentary for where we are right now. There's so many things I could say about this, but in this episode, we're only going to say one thing about it, which is about the absurdity in this movie. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is an absurdist piece of art. No, you. Don't wave your finger at me. No, you wait. You wait. I claim that Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is absurdist. And I think that this is the language that our culture speaks now, because everything is so extreme and overwhelming that the only way we can truly take things seriously now is to view them through the lens of the absurd. Now, Justin A.W. Blair has something to say, as usual, so take it away.
Well, my contention during this podcast is going to be that this is a film that is very much a film. I want to put this in the most precise way that I can. And I'm sure you're going to push back about this, but this is a movie, this is a feminine movie, par excellence. This is a movie for women. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing at all, but I'm going to go through and I'm going to explain to you how everything about this movie is basically not for me. It's not made for me. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But before we do that, before I go to this controversial point, before we get started, I'm going to very briefly give you the word of the podcast, which is going to play into my contention, by the way, that the word is masculine versus the feminine image. The word of the podcast, simultaneous, existing, occurring, or appearing at the same time, from the 1650s. Now, it's related to similis, like, resembling, of the same kind. And all I want to say about this word of the podcast is that, do you see the title of the movie, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once? This word perfectly encapsulates that, because something which is existing, occurring, or appearing at the same time is also related to something which is resembling, like the image resembling the same kind. That's it. Go ahead.
Why does that matter? You just found a synonym and you think it's grand and deep. It's just a synonym.
Listen, some of us are word archaeologists. Some of us are professional word archaeologists, and some of us are not. Some of us are more inclined to, by nature, just look at images and pictures and go onto Pinterest. So this, the word of the podcast is for a part of our audience.
But this is a problem with your argument, because by that logic, then film is inherently feminine. And I think some people have probably made that argument. I think some feminist art critics may have commented on the male gaze that is the camera. I take issue with that to some degree. But like, there is a history of saying that film is both very male, but I guess feminine in the way that it views women? No, I don't know. I don't know where you're going with this. I can't save you.
I'll explain to you, but I'll allow you to tell me when to tell you my theory about it. If you want to talk about absurdism, feel free. But
Tell me later. Mm-hmm. We're going to go first and talk about the absurdism in this film, because there's so many things that stood out to me about this movie that I loved. And while I agree with you that there are very feminine, like female-centric themes in the film, I think the absurdism is not one of those things. I think that's something that is relatable to our culture as a whole, because my sense right now is that we kind of live in a time where everything does feel like it's happening at the same time, both bad and good. And we are so inundated with information and media and every day something new and every day someone new. And it's really overwhelming. And if you try to be serious, if you try to take things seriously all the time, which is what you're encouraged to do in our culture right now, is like, oh, a joke? This is very serious. I'm going to analyze it for all the microaggressions. Oh, a new movie? I'm going to interpret this as the fall of our civilization, and this is emblematic of why everything is going wrong. Oh, this headline? Actually, this is part of a grand conspiracy, and see how this is proving every belief that I've already had. I mean, everything is taken so seriously. And a lot of the times it's the wrong things that we're taking seriously. We're taking jokes seriously. We're taking tweets seriously. But we're not taking the grand events that are going on the schemes of power at a higher level. We don't take those very seriously. Those kind of just happen. And we say, oop, don't like that. And kind of go back to arguing with each other over memes on Twitter. So in a way, absurdism is really refreshing because it is the acknowledgement that all these things are happening. Everything is both tragic and beautiful at the same time, because amid all these terrible things that are happening around us, I mean, you still spend time with your friends. You still enjoy a meal. You still go out with your friends for drinks and laugh. You can still watch a movie and love it. I mean, there's all these little moments of pure joy if you let them be that. But our culture encourages you to take everything seriously and to live like these are the end times. So really, the power move is absurdism. It's to know that there are serious things, to know that there are serious problems, but to know that you can still laugh it all off, because at the end of the day, you're going to be dead real soon and the problems are going to continue and you're going to have spent your second of time on this earth being real mad about stuff that ultimately was out of your grasp, when in reality, the things that were in your grasp the entire time, right there, your loved ones, the earth around you that you can explore, the beautiful films and music that you enjoyed, all of that was right there. And you missed it because you were so mad about people who don't know that you exist doing things that you can't really stop anyway. So this is my rant on absurdism. And now I'll let you tell me why this is either incorrect or move on to your other point.
I don't think, it just sounds like a kind of peasant mindset to me. It's this idea of, I mean, it really sounds like, and again,
listen,
it's fine. Everyone,
I want to
briefly approaches.
I want to give a disclaimer before you begin. We need to give a disclaimer. I think that what our podcast has become is me holding on to my last shreds of optimism and light in this life, and you as the fully black-pilled individual in society, the doomer, if you will. And in our podcast, we have this battle, this tension between embrace of the black-pilled lifestyle and an ability to acknowledge that the black pill has truth to it, but you can still cling to the light as a means of preserving your own sanity and not falling, ultimately victim to all these terrible things. Because if you're just miserable, I mean, are you really, you know, that enlightened? Have you really figured it out?
I don't consider it the light, quote unquote, to go eat at a restaurant while the threat of putting me in a COVID camp or whatever is hovering over my head. There's a point where life and the realities of life become such that it's to just, you know, ignore. So first I'll say there is a point of no return and perhaps I've reached it, but, and I'm not prepared just to say, hey, it's 2023. Let's all just forget about everything that's occurred in the last couple of years. That being said, and yeah, I consider this kind of, I don't think that thinking about world events as absurdist, that sounds like the cope of a peasant.
No, because that's think about the movie, like, Dr. Strangelove. This is absurdism. Yeah, we have an episode on this that you can find. It's an early one too. So if you look into that, buckle up or whatever. God knows what's to be found.
One of my dietary requirements, one of my few suggestions to the people is to follow the dietary requirements of the patriotic general.
And it is the kind of dietary requirement I would expect from you. Anyway, I think that film is very similar because it's this idea that in the face of truly bad, terrible, even world-ending things, there is a kind of nobility and grace and sanity to be found in recognizing that it doesn't actually matter. Because if it's all gonna go down, if it's all really terrible, you being upset and fighting and taking everything in your life miserably serious doesn't change it. And
it absolutely can. It certainly is going to change it more than like nihilistically eating sushi without a mask on, because after you've been able to do that for 2 years. So, I mean, yeah, it certainly can. And eventually these things build up to where things do change. Regardless of that, would you continue?
I would like to make a distinction here, and it's the distinction we discussed relating to Lex Friedman before, where there is there's a difference between choosing to not be essentially victimized by becoming miserable and black-pilled and cynical because of all the terrible things that are going on, while still acknowledging, being aware of them, and doing things to either protect yourself from them or actually defend against them. I don't think that you have to be cynical and, like, you know, negative about everything to recognize and push back on bad things.
Well, good luck. I consider it a peasant dialectic. That's what I think of it as. It's essentially getting abused, and then be like, but it's okay, now I get to go eat sushi. And I'm free. But whatever. Like, but anyway.
What if you abused and then you don't get sushi? If you're going to be abused, why don't you at
you
least get
hardcore.
Sushi? Oh, okay. Well, we'll check in on that in 5 years.
Drink only rainwater and pure distilled alcohol.
It'll be fun to see where we both are in 5 years. You're going to be doing that, and we'll see. We'll see where my
and you're going to be in COVID 2027 or whatever, and someone's going to be putting a mask over your face and telling you. So whatever. But anyway.
This was never.
Should we go back to the main issue, which is that this film is a film for women?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate now.
We're going to get heavy with symbols. Are you ready to get heavy with symbols?
Sure.
So, well, I don't think you even dispute the notion that this is a very feminine movie, right? I mean, so you can look at it a very basic way, that the main character is a woman, and the primary relationship in the film is between a mother and her daughter, right? And again, I'm not saying this is like, I'm simply observing things, okay? I think it goes a lot deeper than that in terms of the symbols in the film. And I think that you can take knowledge of things which, say, remember, I don't know if we covered it. I think we did Carl Jung's book on alchemy, right?
Yeah.
A lot of symbols in there. So let's start with the title of the film. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Now, if I were to ask you, does that sound like a title of a film that represents either chaos or order? Which would you, or just broadly about this film, would you suggest this film is chaotic or orderly?
It is very clearly about chaos.
Right. And traditionally, in many different traditions, not just Western traditions, but traditions throughout the world, and we're talking about mythology here, symbols, that kind of thing. Chaos has been associated with the feminine as opposed to order being associated with the masculine, right? So there you go. Now, if we want to pick out a few different symbols in the film to illustrate this, we certainly can. One would be the looped-in donut of chaos, which is a kind of absurdist image. But again, very much a feminine image, because it's in some ways the undifferentiated infinite, because it loops, by the way, mass of the universe itself.
Yeah. And another one, I feel like the thing that she does with her hands.
Can't hear you.
Oh, the thing that she does with her hands to be like, look through my fingers or whatever. And it creates this, she creates this shape that's almost like diamond. Like, I can't do it with my hands and holding the mic. You don't remember where she's like, the girl that plays like the powerful demon when she first meets the protagonist. She's like, here, let me show you. And they put their hands together and do something like this.
Don't really remember that particularly. Could be. There's a quote from the film also that goes something like, let me see. Well, actually, let me say this. Even within the technique of the film itself, it's a constant barrage of imagery to the point to which you can't even, your brain can't even process it. I think, again, that is a kind of technique which is feminine in nature. Again, the use of image to such an extreme degree. Now, the reason I say, and this isn't my idea, don't blame me. There's plenty of people, and I was trying to think back about this book I'd read a long time ago. It was by Leonard Schlein. It's called The Alphabet and the Goddess. And he was also saying that basically the same representation of the word as masculine and the image as feminine. And so to me, the actual technique of this film by barraging you with images is in and of itself a kind of feminine mode of filmmaking.
Interesting. I see what you mean. Because, yeah, they do cycle through a bunch of different conceptualizations of the same image as a filmmaking technique. Like when they show the demon character, like, she will just walk through and be changing form constantly, simultaneously, infinitely changing form as she moves. And I think that that speaks to your point. Well, this is also a Camille Paglia point, you know, that the feminine is tied to the chaos of nature and that femininity is outside of time as we measure it within civilization, because it is everything everywhere all at once. It is this loop. And she likens this to sexuality, how like for men versus women, female sexuality is kind of like ongoing. If you're having sex as a woman, you can just keep having it. There doesn't need to be this like, I'm done, I cannot perform anymore. Whereas for a man, it is very much a marked start and a marked end. And so this kind of goes to the point that time in the masculine and the feminine is different. It's this measured, ordered time versus this infinite, ongoing time.
And again, I'm building up my point here through multiple different examples in this film. An aspect of this film is that there's a the feminine component of the lesbian relationships throughout the universe or whatever, right? I think that speaks for itself. There is also a particularly there's a particular scene that is very much subversive, which is that there is a character, a minor character, leaping through the air to basically impale themselves on a dildo.
Oh yeah.
So
yes,
we don't have to get into why that is a kind of feminized image. I think that it probably speaks for itself again. There's also a quote in the film, which is, let me bring it up here from my, you're capable of anything because you're so bad at everything. Now, really think about this for a moment. You're capable of anything because you're so bad at everything. In a way, that describes a human being in the stage of infancy. You're capable of anything. Everything is undifferentiated. The world is open to you, right? Everything's possible, But that's because you actually can't do anything. That's another way of saying you're so bad at everything, right? Mm-hmm. And again, if we get into the alchemical symbology of masculine and feminine, there is the concept of undifferentiated matter, prima materia, which is again associated with chaos, which is again undifferentiated. It is not yet ordered and has become something, because as soon as you order and become something, actually possibilities are cut off, mm-hmm. right? Now, again, this may be a little more controversial. This is why I think that, again, this film is not only feminine, it's also a little bit representative of our culture, which I think has become more and more feminine, mm-hmm. because there's a kind of free-floating anxiety. There's this kind of anxiety anytime when your culture, your living, whatever, your world says you can do anything, but you don't do anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. That's one of my favorite parts of the film. I think that's why
it would be.
Of course. Because I'm capable of anything, Justin. Not so bad
and
at
again,
everything.
Listen, I'm trying to make a case here by building up a bunch of different little examples. If someone told you you're capable of anything, would you tend to think that you would be told that by a man or a woman? You're capable of anything.
Yeah, that's very motherly.
Okay. So
I rest my case.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways we can go this, because I've been going into some studies about alchemical symbology.
Oh,
or
boy.
Symbols and this and that.
That's what you need to be doing. That's definitely where you need to be. So listen, let's bring things down to earth here, down to our earthly realm. You know what's interesting? I was thinking as you were talking about the time thing and how the feminine conception of time as undifferentiated and infinite. That's how time works on social media too. And it's really interesting because I think social media is a highly feminine technology, weirdly, but even because it's kind of designed by men oftentimes, but it is feminine in its qualities, in that what does it mostly facilitate? Communication.
Talking, no, it mostly connection. Facilitates illiteracy and a profusion of imagery.
Well,
which is, again, that illiteracy component. And that sounds negative, but it's not supposed to be. You can go back to Leonard Schlein, who, by the way, I don't agree with, but he says, and this goes back to a kind of new age
hippie idea. I wouldn't say illiteracy, though, briefly. I would say, what's a word for a short, like brevity of words? Because, look, Twitter is compacted. It's limited in the word count that you can use. All of social media is. I mean, people try to have deep discussions with me in the comments on Instagram sometimes, and God bless them, but it's like I'm gonna kill myself trying to read these tiny little words in this tiny little format. It innately dissuades you from using the verbal, you know, approach as opposed to imagery. Even Twitter is that way because it's character limited. But some of the other feminine qualities to it are something that's been discussed a lot now, which is it's like it incentivizes reputational attack and display over competence. So if you can make it seem like you know something or say that you know something, that's actually perceived as more valuable than the evidence, the outcome of knowing something in the world, because you can't display that. So I don't know. I feel like that, at least in terms of aggression, in terms of like reputational attack and gossiping. I mean, everybody just uses social media to essentially gossip now, but they're talking about politics and political figures. So somehow we pretend it's okay. Okay, but go on with your point.
It's okay. I'm not making a value judgment on it in particular. I'm saying that it is a feminine mode of being. That's all.
And the time
and
thing.
And again, to go back to this idea, which I don't necessarily agree with, but the idea that, and I think this is wrong in a lot of ways, but there is an idea that societies tended to be more matriarchal before the advent of the written word. And this is something that Leonard Schlein in that book picks up on. I read that like 20 years ago, so I don't remember much about it, but it came to mind when I was thinking about this. And I don't have a well-grounded, thought-out theory about this, but I actually think that we are, because of how much the image as opposed to the word has become more important through the tool of social media, I think that we are going back to a slightly different mode of existing and being, which is more feminine. So his idea was that before the written word, things were essentially matriarchal because hunter-gatherers and stuff tend to live in more matriarchal society. I don't know if that's actually anthropologically the case, but again, this is a broad idea that's been around for a very, very long time. So I think this, and again, I enjoyed aspects of this movie, but there were also times where I could only watch it in about 15-minute increments because it's too much. Like it, and I wonder if there is actually, what would be really interesting to see is if there's a difference in physiological response between men and women based on the way images are projected to you. But that's out of my scope. I'm no scientist.
That's interesting.
So it made me, this film actually made me like, it would start to make me kind of irritated. Like if I, in anything more, so I'd watch it about 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I usually don't do that with films. Then one final thing about this, even though I have many, many other symbols in the movie I could point out to. Again, and I know this sounds far out, in the alchemical literature, the feminine, again, is oftentimes associated with this idea of first material or whatever. And there is one kind of clever scene in the film in which the mother and the daughter actually become rocks.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that, like they become... the symbol of passive, inert, primary material within the film itself.
Wow, that's so crazy. Yeah, that is exactly what that is. This is why I think this is actually a good movie, because it has a lot of depth to it. And even though there are like some little social commentary in terms of like social issues and things, it's all done in a way that actually is coherent with the story and even serves to push the story forward meaningfully. This is what people have gotten really lazy about now, is they think that there's genuine value in socially in signaling your social values when no one cares. No one cares about your social values. If you're going to make a film, you're making a film. So you need to make sure that whatever social values you want to indicate through that film actually serve for making a film. And this movie does that. Like, I think it does the idea of like a feminist movie or whatever, like the woman protagonist. There is no part in this film where I feel like I'm getting like having social values like shoved on me. It is.
You are, though. You just can't see it because it's so rapid.
They're coherent within the story, and they actually serve to propel the story forward in an interesting way.
One more thing. The story doesn't actually go forward. It loops in on itself as it would. But and the most blatant, I mean, part of this is that the one male character which is in the film is the father slash husband of the main character, right? And it's not so much that he isn't the primary, you know, I'm not going to go over this. Oh, the woman is the main character, the man's the main character, how much screen time, that doesn't matter. My point is that his entire MO in the film is essentially to be an ignored kind of weak, like his entire existence, not only in the film, but within the logic of the film, is that he's nice throughout every multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
That's his superpower as a man, is that he's nice.
Okay.
So.
But look, to be fair, they gave him a genuine philosophy. This is not like, I know that there is the argument of like showing men in films now as being like completely spineless and demoralized, like worshippers of the women in the film. But I don't think this character, although he does fit some of those things in kind of having this like somewhat emasculated sidekick vibe to him, I do think that his philosophy as a character is compelling to me. I actually resonate with that worldview.
It should. And it's not a judgment. It's simply an observation that it, of course it should, because you're a woman.
Well,
and I mean, but it is, I mean, it's a smart movie in a lot of ways, and there's no problem. It has its viewpoint, but its viewpoint is very much that the philosophy of this entire character is essentially like, there's the scene where he basically says it, like, it's basically just to be a nice person. And that's good. I'm simply saying that I'm not sure that, I mean, I'm simply saying that plays into everything I've said.
Yeah, and I grant that. I think that if anything, look, you have to have stories that, this is the argument you always get with the political thing. It's like, everybody needs stories that represent them. And so we get this shallow version of that, which is like, look, I've made this character that has completely like white, male, whatever, urban, tech bro ideas. I made them black. Are you happy? You have a story now. That's fake. And then, of course, everybody is so shallow and vapid. They're like, yes, representation. It's like, does that character really resonate with you? Or does it just look like you? Because if all we care about is seeing characters that look like us, then we're not actually getting the benefit of art. The art is not a mirror for you to just stare at yourself. There's nothing there then. It's a complete, exact reflection. I mean, what is interesting is when you see something slightly different. That's why human interactions are so interesting, because they bring something out of you when you interact with someone that's different from you. So, I mean, this art now that like has no interest in actually telling real stories that would be from a different perspective, this is useless. This film accomplishes this idea of like women's stories without actually being garbage social signaling propaganda. It actually is coherent, and oh, to I your agree. Point, like, it is feminine through and through, but in a way that is so true you can tie it to all these old philosophies that I don't even know if the people know. I don't think they were like, okay, so Jung said, when they're making things for this film.
Well, it's created by, I believe the directors are called Daniels or something like that. Yeah. So it's literally it's the synthesis guys. Of Well, it's two individual men fused into one entity called Daniels. Peace out. That's all I got to say. study alchemy.
What? Oh, my God. Okay, how much time do we have left? What is this, 1 minute? Okay. All right. Well, we don't have any time to bring it more down to earth than that. You'll have to do some of the work on your own, dear viewer, dear listener. But tune in for our next episode, where God knows what other mysteries we uncover. And follow us on social media. Join us on Patreon so you can support our explorations into the realm of chaos and so on. See you.